Yesterday, Robert Mass, one of our pastors, gave me a book entitled Life and Thoughts of George R. Brunk, George R. Brunk, the First, by J.C. Winger. It's not in the book, but my thoughts went back to the time Brunk had bishop oversight of our congregation here at Mount Pleasant. Although he lived over in Warwick County, it was 2 years after I was married when the young men of the community organized a baseball team. Some married and some not. Clarence Miller and I were the only Mennonites on the team. George R. did not think any too well of our participation. And one time when he was over to preach, he casually mentioned baseball and quoted the scripture which says, "When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things." Although no disciplinary action was taken, in fact, none was contemplated that I know of, but we took the hint and sold our uniforms and quit playing ball. There is an excellent review of the book in the November 9th issue of Mennonite Weekly Review by Gerald Stewart.
Yeah. You said that y'all wore uniforms and all that?
Yeah, we had light gray, trimmed in dark blue, and Mount Pleasant in dark letters. Mount Pleasant over the chest.
Who did y'all play? Did you
other
teams in the area? Who did your team play against?
Oh, we went over to Kempsville and played. We went over to Salem Church and played Bayside, and different.
Was it all over the place? Were you playing in a church league? Like you were playing against other church teams?
No. It was just a Mount Pleasant community ball team, that's all.
But the other teams that you played were not church teams?
No, they weren't church teams either. They were just community teams, that's all. That's all, and all of it was just community teams.
Mm-hmm. I understand from this book that George R. and his family, when they moved from Kansas, they had intended to come here.
That's right.
You know why they were coming here?
Well, I know what the book says. That's all I know. That was 1910, and that was the year we came. And I was 16 years old. And the church, whatever took place in the church, didn't have much effect on me. I didn't pay no attention to what the church was doing at the time. They were just starting up here. I didn't pay too much attention, so I don't remember anything. But now he talks about different outspoken individuals here at Fentress.
Yes.
And
he even mentions the initials like
J.E.
J.E.
And now Jake Eber's father, Isaac Eber, was a deacon here.
Oh,
they were right active in the church work, but Jake
was not the deacon. His father was the deacon.
His father was Jake. Isaac was the deacon. Jake's father, Isaac, was the deacon.
Was Isaac still living at the time that Brunk thought about coming here? Was Isaac deacon here then?
Oh yes, because that was in 1910. That was in 1910, and Isaac Eby, I remember Isaac Eby's funeral. They had a bearskin rug underneath the casket over Jake's, and Jake asked me to, when they lift that casket to carry it, they walked over to the church from Jake Eby's house. It was there where Nash has lived now.
Yeah.
And asked me to take that rug and take it over to the church and spread it down in the front of the church. So by the time they got over with the casket, it would be set there, ready to set this casket.
A bearskin,
a big black bearskin. No, there was no head to it, just the skin, and the claws, I think, were all, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure. It was quite a thing. It was a rug. It was really a bearskin rug. It's what it was. It had a lining to it. It was a bearskin rug.
Do you know, Did the deacon Isaac, you know anything about how he felt about Brunk coming over here? And it was his son that said he didn't want Brunk to come.
That's right. His son that was outspoken. Isaac was a mild-mannered man. Isaac, I don't think, would have objected. I don't think Isaac would have made any objections. He was a mild-mannered, very nice man. Very nice man, Isaac was. Jake was all right, too, but he talked too much, that's all. And was very much in breath, putting out his own ideas, whatever he thought. But now I didn't know, it was in this book as I first found that out, that there was opposition to George R. coming here. See, Wirt was already here.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Wirt, J.W., the bishop.
Yeah.
He was already a bishop here. And I see in the book that he said that if George R. comes here, why, he'll leave.
I noticed that too, yes.
Now, that was news to me.
You didn't know that before.
I didn't know that before.
I remember reading that later on, after Brunk was over at Warwick for a while and established over there, it was Jake Wirt who made the motion in conference, in Virginia conference, that Brunk be the bishop over there. I think, isn't it true that at one time Wirt had been the bishop of both here, this Norfolk district, and the Warwick district?
That's right, he was.
And then when Brunk was over there for a while, like a year or so, then Wirt got up in conferences and made the motion that Brunk be bishop over there.
That's right.
And that was passed.
Yeah. But then it was after Wirt had his difficulty that George R. temporarily took over the bishop oversight of Mount Pleasant.
Over here.
Yeah, he come over here until then later on. Well, there was some dissatisfaction. Some folks didn't like Brunk. And then's when they just started coming down from the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And relieved George R. of this. He wanted to be relieved of this charge over here. So they relieved him, and the valley bishops took turns coming down.
What's this about the chitlins?
Chitlins?
Yeah.
Well, there's been quite a lot of discussion about the chitlins in the budget over the years. John Miller and I, we like our chitlins.
So
we stick up for the chitlins side of the argument, and others, they run it down. Others run it down. Depends on folks up north, they didn't even know what chitlins were. Do you know what chitlins are?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, I thought you did.
Never eaten them, though.
Huh? Never eaten them?
No.
Yeah, I eat them until Maggie got to fussing about makes her skillet smell. She ain't going to cook, can't cook no more chitlins in her skillet, so I kind of dropped them off. But now, in last week's budget, Mose B. Miller writes from Sarasota, Florida, and he writes an interesting article. It's not who's visiting and who's been here and who's going home and all this and that. He writes about his fishing and things that he does, and I try to make my article a little the same way. And he said, now I've seen it all. I was to the market last week, and there was a half gallon buckets of frozen chitlins. And so that I had that a little different. I had his name in. I had in there, to Mose B. Miller, you're passing judgment before you have all the evidence. Oh, he said, and I left them there and said, so far as I'm concerned, they can stay there. And I had on, to Mose B. Miller, you're passing judgment before you have all the evidence if you have not sampled the chitlins.
Uh-huh.
But now I thought, no, I'll back off of that, because when you mention somebody's name, if you don't happen to hit them just right, they can get back on you some kind of bad sometime.
Yeah.
And
that was a wise move on your part.
Huh?
That was a wise move on your part.
Yeah, I don't mention people's names too much.
Is that your budget articles right there?
Yeah, those are all carbon copies of
now. Ira, you ought to have those preserved. You ought to put those in the. You ought to let us put those in our church archives, up at Harrisonburg. So because you have a lot of congregational material in there.
Oh yeah, it's
back to the years. You've got all kinds of things.
A lot of history.
A lot of history in that.
Yeah.
You ought to let us put the. You know, we have every congregation of the Virginia Conference has a designated spot in the archives. In fact, the conference pays the college $1,000 a year to preserve the records of conference.
Yeah.
So we have our portfolio in the archives, and all the church bulletins go there, and things that we've been able to collect back through the years, old church records and all that, are there in that box.
Yeah, well, these are all in order. They're all
chronological order.
In chronological order, yeah, everyone is.
If you decide that you want to put those in the archives, you let me know, and I'll.
All right. I'll keep that in mind.
Keep that in mind.
I'll do that.
Because you've got a lot of history there that's collected back through the years. It would be valuable to have.
Yeah, a lot of history.
When did you start writing?
In 1961. 71. Well, anyhow, the first year we went to Colorado,
uh-huh.
It was in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
We went out there. And when we left, Mrs. Emory Hostetter used to write once in a while, but not regular. She said, "Ari," said, "when you get out there, you write for the budget. So then we can all read what you're doing."
Mm-hmm.
So we got out there and we got snowed in. It was the first week in April. It was we got there on Good Friday, and Easter Sunday we were snowed in. In fact, it started snowing Friday night, and by Saturday morning, we couldn't get out no more. And there was a telephone there, and Jess Kaufman had charge of the work at that time, and he called me on the telephone. I said, "How you getting along?" I said, "All right." There was a coal burning cook stove and a pile of coal outside, and there was an oil burning heater, and there was an oil tank full of oil outside, and we had taken an electric blanket along, and we were just all right, but we couldn't go nowhere. Mm-hmm. And Jess said, I was worried about you. But he said, "I can't get the road plowed open until the road crew gets the main highway open." He said, "As soon as they get the main highway open, then they'll plow the open the road up to the camp, and then you can get in and out. But if there's anything you need or you have any trouble, give me a ring." He said, we'll get in some way." No, I said, "We're perfectly all right." And we never did get in touch with the outside world until the snowplow came in about the middle of the week. And there were some books on the shelf there, some magazines and stuff, and I read and read until I got tired of reading. So I told my dad, I believe I'll write a letter to the budget while I'm sitting here doing nothing. So I did. I wrote a letter to the budget, and I ended up by saying that if this is printed, I may write again sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wasn't no time at all until I got the next budget that when people had time to answer to the budget. "Keep on writing, Ira. We enjoy your article, and keep on writing." I said, "Write every week." So I did. I wrote every week. Well, then we came home about the 1st September, fall. We were there for 4 months. April, May, June, July, August. 5 months. Come home, said, "Well, I'll drop the budget letters. There ain't nothing to write from around here much." And Nettie Hostetter, she writes once in a while. She can write the news. But same old story. I missed one week or two. In fact, I think I said that I wouldn't write anymore now. We were back home, and I wouldn't write anymore. Come and go and rebuttal. "Right, keep on writing. We're in a light yard to go." In fact, my sister Esther Scottdale, she subscribed to the budget purposely so she'd hear from us once a week. And my niece, Bill Livingood, the Springs, they got it for the same reason, so they'd hear from us.
And so
I started writing every week, and I've written every week ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes over here and sometimes there. But now here lately, it's always been from here. I'm not sure, there might even be some pages there that go back from where we were up at Lauraville.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure, but anyway, they go quite a ways back. I know that.
Now those are some of the bottom ones there were handwritten.
And in fact, that they go back here to where they were
handwritten.
Handwritten.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Is this
you don't have them all dated, eh?
No, they're not all dated. They're
January 1, no year.
But they're just a year. Just a month. The year isn't all. Yes, by what I had written.
But is that from the time you began writing, you think?
No. No,
that's not all of them. Somebody told me that George R. preached the sermon here at Mount Pleasant when the church was dedicated. Do you remember that?
I wasn't here. Oh, I don't know.
Well, that's right. Did you all come after, just after that?
I came. He came during the summer, and we came in November, the 1st of November. I came the 1st of November. Church was already dedicated. I wasn't here for the dedication.
That was in May, I believe.
We were there.
May.
Now, you were there, yes.
Hey, Maggie was here for the dedication, yeah. Yeah. But we didn't get in until November.
Maggie,
so George R. had been here. Came in the summer. And
Maggie
doesn't know much anymore.
Oh. You don't remember much about May 10, 1910, eh?
No, some of it I'm glad to forget, and some I wish I could remember.
Yes.
I thought the church was dedicated in June. Your birthday's in May.
23rd of May is my birthday.
Your birthday's the 23rd of May.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't the church dedicated in June?
No.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't argue with it because I wasn't here. But there's a history to tell it someplace.
Why don't you know?
I don't know.
It's dark so early.
Huh?
Yes.
It's dark so early.
If George R. preached a sermon, well, he couldn't, that wouldn't have been very, that...
It would hardly have been in this book.
It wouldn't hardly have been in that book. No, it didn't. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. That was just a... Yeah. It wasn't controversial.
Yeah, right.
I really don't need to say that because that might be repeated too.
But I remember we were in Ohio one time when George R. preached a conference sermon there in the evening. And you know, he certainly did preach a sermon.
He did.
And then he got out, he got off the pulpit and walked down the aisle and off.
Went home.
Home.
Yeah. Didn't stay after the service or
didn't stay fast.
Shake hands or anything.
No. I think he left. I think he said from the pulpit that he's got another appointment that he's got to meet tomorrow night, and he wouldn't be here for the conference. He was there for the preacher's sermon.
Maggie, how long was it after Ira came he began to notice you, a young lady like you?
He wasn't here very long.
He wasn't here very long?
He wasn't here very long.
How long until you started with him?
Those days.
Young folks would go to some place for dinner. Nearly every day. Where's the crowd every Sunday? Where's the crowd going today? Well, going so and so. Anyway, the first Sunday went to 80 Winger's. Purposely because of me coming in and Fanny. Fanny was single then. And get us acquainted with the young people of the community. Mm-hmm. And she was there and I saw her. I remember seeing her. and I was attracted to her somehow, but Ernest Miller was courting her then.
Oh, I see.
And her brother Harvey was here. I remember him real well. He was the life of the young folks, of the boys anyhow.
You mean he was like he was a crackerjack, a jokester?
Yeah, he was a good storyteller, and he had everybody interested and had everybody into it. But anyhow, I saw. But didn't pay no attention anymore, because after all, Ernest was supporting her. But in the meantime, Tim Wingers lived up there, and lots of times we'd walk down to the evening meeting, and walk home. And so one evening I started walking alongside of Molly Brunt, and after we got after a while, I got taking Molly out a time or two with a horse and buggy, but nothing ever developed very much, but. Then Ernest went to Heston, and when he was gone, well, that left, I still said that he went off and left the stable door open. But anyhow, then, when I don't know how, I wouldn't remember the first time that we went anywhere together. But I think maybe we used to go to colored meeting. Colored folks had protracted meetings, and they'd have a hooping big time, you know. And a lot of the whole young folks would be around the outside of the church. And I think one time I asked her to go along to colored meeting with me. We used to go to colored meeting. Colored folks had protracted meetings, and they'd have a hooping big time, you know. And a lot of the whole young folks would be around the outside of the church. And I think one time I asked her to go along to colored meeting with me.
Down
here at this colored church.
Methodist at the Mount Pleasant.
At Mount Pleasant colored church,
me.
Yeah.
You asked me?
It wasn't the same building that's there now. They had a nice little building with a steeple, a dandy little, snug little building. But when the Cooper's Company started down here, why, there was most too many people to get into this little building. Mm-hmm. And the people at Fentress built their new church and sold the old one. And these colored people bought it, dismantled it, took it apart piece by piece, and brought it down here and set it back up again.
So that old church is still the old Centerville Baptist
that's
Church?
That used to be the old Fentress Baptist Church. And they had their preacher was a kind of a carpenter, and always did kind of feel like he done it to keep himself employed so he'd get a little extra money. And anyhow, that's what they've done. And let's see, I think they left a little old church there and built the other one around it and to it, and I don't know. But it wasn't as nice, they never got as nice a job as they had in the original church. The original church was a dandy little church, and had a steeple on it and a bell. You'd ring that bell, and Sunday mornings you'd ring that bell, and they had a good church.
Yeah.
How long?
Ira come in the fall, and I come in the spring, and he come in the fall then.
All of the same year.
Oh yes.
Yeah. She came.
Anytime.
She was here when I come in.
Then how many? Then what? Then how much later than that did y'all get married? What year did you get married?
Well, we got married in 1913. We came down in 1910, and it was about 1911 maybe when we started going together.
So you went together a couple of years.
Yeah.
Before you got married.
Yeah. We went there. Back
my
in the
mother
meantime,
didn't think much of it either.
She didn't think much of Ira.
No.
Not near as much as you did.
No.
They moved up to Butch Station then, and but we were still going together.
Well.
Eventually we got married. Got married kind of on the spur of the moment. We'd planned to get married. Hadn't set any time. Then my mother died, and my three sisters, Fanny was already here. Two sisters came from Scottsdale, Esther and Ella. My brother Noah from Springs came down for the funeral. And we got talking this thing, well, now, this would be a good time to get married while these folks are here, and they'd be in on the wedding. But Noah couldn't stay. Noah had to go back. He had to go back right away, right the day after the funeral. And it was a day or two after the funeral that we got to talking about this thing and decided on getting married. And Noah wasn't here, but the rest of the girls were all here.
Noah
had Fanny and Ella and Esther and Ruth Bender. Now Ruth Bender was living with us at that time. And but then she left soon afterwards and went out to Kansas to her father. See, her father, Ruth, the Bender children were small. Ruth was just a couple months old when her mother died. Paul was about maybe a year or two older, and Ralph was a year or two older than Paul. And they lived next door to us there at Springs. And when their mother died, D.H. was left with these little children. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how he and my parents got together, but he had a room upstairs in our home there at Springs, and my parents took care of the children. And D.H. told my mother, said, now, you can have this little girl as long as you live and are in your right mind. I won't take her away from you, said, you raise her, and said, you can have her as long as you're in your right mind and are living. So when we moved to Virginia, well, of course, she came with us. And but then when Mother died, well, that was the end of Ruth's stay with us. Mm-hmm. She went back to Heston to live with her parents there, D.H. had the boys all the while. He had taken the boys with him. He went to Scottsdale first. He got married to a girl at Springs there, a cousin of mine, and they moved to Scottsdale, and he was editor of the Gospel Herald, and they took the boys along. He kept the boys. Then he was appointed president of Heston College. Then they moved to Heston, mm-hmm. and he took the boys with him there, of course. And that's where they were when my mother died, and that's where Ruth went then. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of the way that Fanny and Esther got out to Heston. They decided that they'd go out there to Heston. D.H. was there, and they, brother-in-law, they'd go out there. And that's where Fanny met Alan Good. He was a widower, and they got married. Mm-hmm. And that's where Esther met Ed Yoder. He was going to school, and so was Esther. And they struck up a friendship, and they got married. Mm-hmm. And
when you all decided to get married kind of quickly, like... When you decided to get married rather quickly,
Well,
did you have to go? What did you do? Go see the preacher then, or how did you arrange for this thing? Who married you?
A.D. Winger. We had talked about getting married for maybe 6 months or so, a couple months, some time, but hadn't set any date and wasn't in no hurry. Didn't make no difference what something. I don't know. Anyway, we didn't. When we decided to get married, I went and asked A.D. Now, those days, it was against the Virginia Conference rules to have a church wedding. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have a church wedding because the temptation to put on display, mm-hmm. and to make a show out of it. Mm-hmm. And those days, they kind of had a habit, I don't know where it ever originated, sneak off and get married, nobody know it until after you're married. So we didn't spread it around. I went up to A.D., and A.D.'s family didn't even know that we were getting married. He told Etta was working there, and it was just a little while before Rhoda was born, and he told his family, he said, get the front room ready, we're going to have company tonight. All right, that's all right, that was nothing too unusual for ADs. And so my folks walked up through the field from David Troyer's. Maggie and I had a horse and buggy. We drove up with a horse and buggy and went to ADs. And in the front room. We just went in there, and there were my family was my folks, my father and my sisters and Ruth Bender were sitting there, and Etta and A.D.'s family, and...
Was any of her family there?
Huh? They lived up at Butt Station. They never even came. Oh. She said her mom didn't think too much of it. Yeah. No, they didn't even come down to the wedding. But anyhow, during the week, in the evening, after supper, and we just went in, stood up there, we never even sat down. A.D. got up, and we handed him the license, and he married us, and we turned around and went on
back. That's it. Daddy, I don't know why you don't never forget anything.
Huh?
He has a
such memory. I remember that. Well, I remember it. Yeah.
She said, Daddy, I don't see how you never forget anything.
Well, anyhow, that's the way it all happened. We went back to my home, and that's where we stayed. We didn't go no honeymoon. We didn't go no honeymoon until, after I retired. We went up to Canada, and we went down to Florida, and we went here, there, and yonder. But
we did our courting later after we were married.
You had your honeymoon a little later, right?
I have found out that we sleep better. Get along better if we have a very light supper, hardly any. We call them milkshakes, that you get instant breakfast. Mm-hmm. Instant breakfast stirred in a glass of milk and is supposed to have the nourishment of an egg and two pieces of bacon and a piece of toast and I think a glass of milk. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I guess I'm telling you because we always sleep good on it and feel nourished. And I showed it to Neoma one time. Neoma and Ruth were down there Saturday. We were talking about supper, and I showed them what we were going to have. I have chocolate. She has vanilla. Mm-hmm. And Nelma said none of that. Said that stuff is loaded with calories. He said she can't handle that. But if she didn't take anything else with it, I don't know. Ruth said then, well, she said that'd just be dessert for me. She said I couldn't make a meal out of that. But we do make a meal. We make supper out of it. Mm-hmm. And we probably have each of us have a piece of toast with jam on it.
Well, you eat your
preserves.
You have some.
I like pig preserves, and she likes pineapple. So we each have our own.
You eat your larger meal at lunchtime then.
Huh?
Oh. Eat your bigger meal.
Yeah, the biggest meal at dinner time. Today we had.
That's the way we would do it. But folks bringing it in, why it's good.
Yeah, we had fried chicken.
Good to see the little lady still looking good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Make sure. You know, somebody wanted to tell me here some time ago that I was looking. Well, I know it was all baloney. I didn't believe it, but anyway. Well, I look younger than some of these younger ones that come to church here. I didn't believe
it. You didn't believe that?
She used to work at Miller's store. And in her day, she used to like to show them how she could take a 100-pound bag of sugar and put it up on the counter.
No.
Yeah.
Did she work in the old store?
In the old
Miller
store. Old store in 1910. In fact, I guess she started working as soon as she come here. Mm-hmm. I guess Ernest seen to that she got a job in the store. Yeah. But anyhow, that's where I first saw her. Uh-huh. See, the Kimes came from Spring, same way we did.
Oh, yeah.
I knew all these Kimes. They visited our home before they ever moved to Virginia. Uh-huh. In fact, they had something to do with us moving down. He had asthma and catarrh, and so did my dad. And he wrote back and said he believed it'd be good for my dad down here. He believed he could breathe more freely, and the winters weren't so severe. But they moved down here the year before we did. And Lawrence, they had one boy, Lawrence. Mabel had a brother, Lawrence, and he was just my age. And so Saturday night, we moved down here in the middle of the week sometime. And Saturday night, my dad suggested that I go down to Kimes and stay with Lawrence overnight and go with him to church the next day, and I'd get in with the young folks here. And my dad was worried all the while for fear I would get homesick, and that would have worried him if I'd have got homesick. So I went down, I walked down to Kimes, had never been down the road, and it was getting the evening, and I was trotting along, and here comes Joe Wirt out of Jake Eby's place, and with a two-horse team, and I was kind of running, so he stopped, saw I was a stranger anyhow, and was running, so he stopped, wondered did I want to ride. Well, I said, I want to go to Kimes. Do you know where Kimes live? Oh, yes, I'm going right by there. Said, in fact, they just live down there in that next house down there, but said, I'll take you along. So I got up in a two-horse wagon and rode with him down to Kimes. And then after supper, Lawrence says, well, let's go up to Miller's store. They lived there where Clarence is, that two-story house on this side of the store there, where Clarence Miller had lived at one time.
Yes.
Well, that's where Kimes lived. Mm-hmm. And said, let's walk up to the store. So Lawrence and I walked up the store. As we were walking along, it was dark. Lawrence says, hello, George. I said, good night. He said, you talking to somebody? And I said, I didn't even see anybody. George Johnson, colored fella, black. Yeah, he saw him, he knew him. But I didn't even see anybody. Black, he was black. Anyhow, I went up to the store, and there was Maud and Maggie behind the counter. But Maggie, Maud, she come out. Lawrence introduced me to Maud. But I think Maggie stayed back at the counter. I don't think I saw her. I didn't see Maggie until the next day up at AD's. But she said she saw me. Mm-hmm. Said she had no idea that little scrump gonna be her man someday. But anyhow, Tim Winger's buried a child soon after they came here. And AD's buried a child, less than a year old, both of them, soon after soon after they lived here. And then I presume maybe Lawrence might have been about the next funeral. No, Leslie Swartz's sister died. That was the first funeral I was to here.
Uh-huh.
And that was right within a couple of weeks after we came here.
What caused her death? What caused her death?
I think she had cancer. Mrs. Carter. I kind of think she had cancer. I'm not sure. She was a comparatively young woman anyhow. She wasn't an old woman. Yeah, and Ed Musselman's wife was buried here. That was before before Lawrence drowned. She was buried before we came here. Mm-hmm. They were living here when we got here. Jake Eby's sister.
No, not well, Jake.
Married Ed Musselman.
Well, were they the folks that lived where Titus Burgess lived at one time?
Yeah.
Did she die in childbirth, or what was her?
No.
She had a new baby.
Did it? Was it? Oh, I didn't know that.
It wasn't altogether new, but I think that's...
Uh-huh. Maggie worked for him for a while. That was before you worked in the store. Yeah. You worked for Ed Musselman.
Well, you said...
Well, you lived right neighbors to him. See?
Between them. Right. You said the young people used to always get together, or usually get together Sunday afternoon in a group somewhere.
Somebody would have a group of young folks, and they'd spend the afternoon singing. And up at AD's, he always had Bible questions, and he had a contest to who can find a chapter the quickest. He'd call out a chapter, and whoever found a treasure... No, I was always sunk. God, isn't it good? It used to embarrass me no end. I couldn't find no chapters in the Bible. But I know, at Kimes one time, the young folks were all there together, had chicken. And Mrs. Kimes said, Mabel's mother. Now this chicken's pretty stubbly, but whoever gets the most chicken or gets the most stubbles.
What you want, Daddy? What do you want?
I want you to sit still.
That I can't do.
That won't do. Yeah, I want you to just sit still.
Well, what else did the young people do for
Well, that was about it.
They didn't have a literary society then, or...
Huh?
They didn't have
they didn't have a literary society. I started one later. Yeah, we had a literary society. Because I remember Molly Brunk, she was a debater from way back. Oh, she would put all into it she had. And Mrs. A.D. was a good debater because she was educated.
Oh, yeah.
And she was a good debater. She generally won her debates because of her education. But Molly just got hers by sheer pluck.
Uh-huh.
She just had a common school education. But she would win a debate just by her pluck and her delivery, the way she put it out.
Who were the other debaters? Good debaters.
Huh?
Who were the other good debaters?
Oh, well, Charlie Warfel and Dwight Miller, they were just fresh from Goshen College. And they generally pit them two against each other. And
what did they debate about?
Well, the only time I remember debating was resolved that fire is more powerful than water. And I remember Dwight, he had the water part, and he said, now... He wants it understood right at the beginning that the power of fire to destroy the earth dare not be mentioned, because that is supernatural, and that dare not be mentioned. And I don't remember who won the debate. No, yeah. I don't know.
What did it matter? What did it matter?
Yeah. Well, young people used to go to...
And they used to go to the beach.
Go to the beach.
And they'd have a hayride now and then, uh-huh, with a team, take two horses, a real moonlight night. I remember one time we decided to go on a hayride. I think it was Carrie's birthday. And we were going to surprise her, and did. And she and Ada had already gone to bed, lived down there on Cason Road. And we went there with a hay wagon and all the young people on it except Carrie and Ada. And we hooped and hollered, and they stuck their heads out the upstairs window. Well, they'd come on down. Nobody come on down. We went for a hayride, moonlight night.
Well,
with loose hay on the wagon.
Oh, yeah.
A wagon with two horses hitched up and loose hay. Just sit on the loose hay.